welcome to another episode of Pit Lane Parlay. We're gonna call this the travel edition, because instead of talking mainly IndyCar, we're gonna talk mainly about Matt's travel troubles. No, in all seriousness, thank you everybody again for tuning in. There's no IndyCar this weekend, but be back next weekend to end the season on a really fun triple header note. A couple things to get to, silly season related and whatnot, in a minute, but as usual on the IndyCar side of things, we start with something fun or off topic. And Matt, you had yourself one hell of a trip for your little vacation.
Yeah, so for the second year in a row, my wife, parents, and I, we went to Virginia Beach to visit family. And there's one airport in Norfolk that doesn't really take direct flights from Minneapolis. I think the most frustrating part about the story is that when we did book our flights 5 or 6 months ago, it was originally set up as a direct flight to Norfolk, which is the only reason we booked that flight. It's like, wow, this doesn't happen very often. So we saw our family actually at a family wedding 2 weeks ago anyways, before we had this trip. And my aunt asked me, you know, like, hey, what time do you guys fly out on Sunday so that I know when to be there by and when I can leave by to go do errands and whatever. And I checked my Delta app and I'm like, wait, hang on a second. It says we have a layover on our first flight now. Like, what the hell is this? So not only did it go from 8 o'clock to like 5:45 or something, meaning I had to like take time off of work or whatever to now make the first flight. We ended up going through Atlanta. And so on the flight out to Atlanta, it's like 8 o'clock. We get like 30 minutes away from Atlanta, and we have to divert to Alabama because there is weather over the Atlanta airport. And when you're looking at the radar, Georgia's a pretty big state. The only storm in the state at that time was directly over Atlanta. So it's not like it was some huge line of storms. It was literally one little bubble of storms over Atlanta on Wednesday. So we had to divert to Alabama, meaning we were going to miss our connecting flight. And so by the time we refueled and took off to Atlanta to finish the trip, by the time we got rebooked for our flight to Norfolk, it was 1 a.m. Our flight boarded at 7:45 a.m., and this is also, I think it's the biggest airport in America.
It's up there.
Yeah, so it takes a while just to walk to places, and then from there it was like a mile walk to the nearest hotel, and we didn't know like how many shuttles would there be at 1 a.m. So I'm like, you know what? Maybe let's not pay the $150 to stay in a hotel for 4 hours and then just have to wake up at, you know, 6 a.m. to get back through security or whatever. Like, let's maybe just sleep in the airport. Terrible decision. I think it was a no-win situation wherever we went, because like spending $150 for that amount of time is not fun, but sleeping in an airport was abysmal. I slept for maybe an hour. And so we got our flight. We got into town, thankfully, at like 10 a.m. So I still had most of the day to enjoy. I did pass out randomly at like 5 o'clock just because I was so tired. So we thought that was like, you know, we don't have too many travel stress stories. But, you know, like, oh, man, that sucks. But at least got to enjoy the vacation. So we get to Sunday night. We fly out to Detroit at like 6:30 p.m. and, you know, 5 minutes before so we actually got on the plane and we were 2 minutes from taking off, and we had to deplane because all flights were grounded in Detroit because of a storm. And, you know, there's a massive hurricane, and just hoping everybody in the south's doing all right, because that sounds, you know, terrible. And you know, I'm sitting here complaining about my flights. It pales in comparison to what's going on. But this is just me venting, because I don't get to do that very often. And I just, we were so close. If the door had closed, we'd have been in the air and we could have figured something out in the air. But because they're grounded, they won't allow flights to Detroit to take off at all. And then we're going to miss our connection to Minneapolis. So the solution was to book a Monday morning flight for 5:50 a.m. and then connect to Minneapolis at like 9:30. So I'd like call my boss, be like, sorry, I'm gonna be late again. This, you know, vacation is ruining my work schedule. I had to call my aunt. She thankfully allowed us to stay at her house again. Like, not a problem for her part, obviously. She was super happy that we could come back and hang a little bit more. So I got to steal more of her beer at least. We eventually made it back, but man, two canceled flights on one trip was a tough pill to swallow. We don't really have too many of these travel stories, Sammy and I, of pure misery like this one, but man.
Yeah, usually
I was glad to get home.
Usually when I have travel trouble, it's like one way. Like when I went to Iowa for the race, you know, when we had that crazy storm, it took me almost 24 hours to get to Iowa. But, you know, on the way back, it was okay. Like, when you get hit both ways, like, that's impressively awful.
Yeah, and we're not connecting flight people. Like, we try to avoid at all cost. It's just getting to Norfolk and then getting back is, like, almost impossible to fly direct. So,
yeah,
I think the solution here is David Lighting just needs to take us next year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's the official PLP pilot, and he's not really done his job yet. So I think we're going to have a talk with him on that one.
Yes, that is me venting about that. Before we get to the, well, there's not too much IndyCar news to discuss this week, but we wanted to expand on our thoughts and well wishes to the Miller family for the passing of Robin Miller. I know Mike had his pre-recorded message in the episode last week because the news came out after that we had recorded, so we wanted to make sure we acknowledged the passing of Robin Miller. To me, I think the thing that stands out the most is his willingness to speak his mind. I think that the way he did it in an objectified and respectful manner is something that we could all learn from. I think being able to speak your mind is a lost art. And I think for him to do that and for me to see a fellow person in the media center, the one time I got to see him in the media center, because obviously he's like a million times cooler than me. For me to see a guy like him speak his mind kind of set an example for how others should do it and how it's okay to do it. And yes, if you're irrational, there's going to be consequences. But if you can back up what you're saying, it's something that you should be able to do as a media member. So for me, that's what I'll take away. I only got to really be in the same kind of area as him once. That was at Iowa 2019. He was talking with Katie Hargrett and Dave First and I think Bruce Martin. They were actually updating each other about John Andretti and how Miller was like trying to call around to people to see if he could help in any way or see if he could assist John with any of the paperwork to get into the clinical trial he was trying to get into. So that's where his focus was at during the middle of a race weekend and what he wanted to update his friends about. So to me, that was really awesome to hear him kind of trying to do anything he could for his friend John. So that's really the only time I got to kind of listen to him talk in the same area as me. I didn't really get to say anything to him, but obviously hearing what he said to Mike was really awesome. So he's obviously a huge loss for the paddock, and just thinking of his friends and family, it's a tough loss for everybody, really.
I don't know how I could have said anything better, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Job well done, and yeah, what do we got left here?
Well, we got Oval Watch.
Oval Watch. Okay, let's do it.
Jimmie Johnson has tested on an oval, and he told Motorsport that he's in this for the long haul. So he's not only focusing on 2022 for IndyCar, but he's focused on 2023. He said, per Marshall Pruitt, Joey Barnes, Racer Mag, quote, "The overall experience has been awesome today. We learned a lot. I was able to get up to speed, put down some really fast times. Being at a track I've raced that in the past, i.e. NASCAR, I think was helpful. And the laps I ran today helped me piece together the similarities that exist between IndyCar and NASCAR, and there are certainly some differences that I was able to grasp today as well." Seeing his reaction on social media, seeing the quotes, got to be nothing but positive there, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm excited by it. I'm glad everything seemingly went well with the test, and I'm happy to welcome Jimmy here as long as he wants, and I'm sure there'll be somebody who's you know, the social media keyboard warriors will have fun with his comments, but I think he's really fun to have around the paddock, and I'm sure with a little bit more time he'll be decently competitive, and if he can keep bringing sponsors that are really excited to be an IndyCar like Carvana, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, I think it's only positive for the series. I don't see any negatives that come from this, you know, so long as he can continue to show growth and, you know, avoid any high speed accidents. I think it's only going to be positive for IndyCar. So I think this test is a good first sign. I think the way he talks about the future is a good sign. I know Chip Ganassi's mantra is that he likes winners, but I can also imagine that Chip likes money and attention, which he's getting plenty of. So to me, as long as the checks keep clearing, this has to be really good for the team as a whole, because he gets a lot of attention at the track on a race weekend, which... Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, this is slightly off topic, so I'll wait if you wanted to wrap up your point.
Nah.
Okay. Do you think, so obviously Jimmy Johnson attracts a lot of attention. Do you think that helps guys like Alex Palou and Marcus Ericsson, who maybe have a little bit less media attention this year than maybe in Ericsson last year, because obviously Palou wasn't on Ganassi, but he draws some of that attention away from them and they're able to, you know, mentally prepare for a race a little bit better than they would have previously? Or am I just making up BS because I thought of something real quick?
I don't want to phrase it quite like that, but I don't know if it's necessarily helps them, because for me, if I was a guy like Alex Palou, who I went through and kind of documented where everybody's at on like Twitter followers as far as where they're at, which is not the end all be all of someone's popularity.
Of course it is.
Okay. Because we know Santino has a lot of fans, whether you like to admit it or not. He does have a lot of fans, but he only has 10,000 followers on Twitter. And then I think the next highest was Palou at 20,000 versus Ericsson's got 300-some thousand. Obviously, a lot of that's probably coming from Formula One. TK's got 300-some thousand. Dixon leads the most. Dixon's up there for most with just the genuine IndyCar-only kind of guys. Like, he and Newgarden are up there. Rossi's up there. Hinch might be the leading. And they're all in the 100,000 to 120,000 range. Jimmy has 1.1. Montoya has an insane amount, like 1.5, I think.
Yeah.
But then there's Palou, who has 20,000. So, for me, if I was Palou, I'd want as much attention as I could get, because that's just going to help the brand. And, obviously, his championship effort is definitely helping the brand. But anything to increase your growth on social media is positive. So I think
it's fair.
If I was Palou, I'd want as much attention as possible.
Alrighty.
Do you disagree?
No, I agree. You raise valid points. I was thinking race, like ability to focus on race day, because everybody still wants to bug Jimmy and Alex. Where was I at the last race?
Gateway.
Gateway, yeah. And Alex was able to kind of slip by some people because people were talking to somebody else, but again, it could just be me reading into things, because there's not much too much going on this week.
Yeah. Well, where do you weigh in? Because obviously you were told something at Gateway about leader circle. It is like this like never-ending debate between media members in the public eye. So like, you know, with tweets and whatever. Because, you know, I had tweeted a thing about where everybody's at with leader circle, and I had someone case come back or tweeted us saying like, you know, hey, Kevin Lee and Kirk Cavan said otherwise in their podcast. It's like, all right, well, we were expressly told this last weekend. So, I mean, like, sure, that it's like, seems like everybody's getting a different answer. I'm not calling Kevin Lee a liar,
sure,
obviously, because he probably has, you know, a lot of information coming his way too. That's where he got that information from. So I don't think he just made it up. So what is your, I think it was what Nathan Brown had an article about it, because how it's complicated. And apparently you can only get 3 leader circles worth of money, which is news to me.
Yeah, that was an old rule. I don't know if, you know, because Andretti's grandfathered in. I don't know if maybe that rule went away. The toughest part is that.
Hey there, and welcome to the Joy of Paddle podcast, hosted by me, Minter Dial, a veteran of the paddle tennis world, and sponsored by Paddle 1969. Whether you're a paddle tennis aficionado, just beginning, or have never even heard of paddle, or padel, as it's called in North America, this is an exhilarating new show that delves into the captivating stories of notable paddle personalities worldwide. In its inaugural season, you'll be treated to exclusive anecdotes, valuable tips, life lessons, and humorous moments shared by esteemed professional paddle players, industry insiders, and passionate paddle enthusiasts. With each season aligning with the Pro Tour, you can anticipate 2 engaging episodes per month. The Joy of Paddle podcast is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network, where you can find other great shows in a number of categories, such as sports, health and wellness, true crime, and fiction. To find out more about Evergreen Podcasts, go to www.evergreenpodcast.com. Vamos!
Sports stars. They're like superheroes.
But they're actually real.
Which is why we've made a podcast about them. You see,
they've all got a story.
But too many of these stories were cut short.
Kobe Bryant.
Payne Stewart.
Flo Jo.
Phil Hughes.
Justin Fashanu.
We're writing episodes about all of them.
And sadly, many more.
Death of a Sports Star. A new series from Crowd Network.
If you go to IndyCar for a direct quote, they pretty much say what Nathan Brown said is, oh, the leader circle is designed for blah, 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 blah. Where do I stand on it right now? I stand on exactly what I said before. I was told what I said, what did I say, last week or the week before? It was somewhat recently, which is exactly also what Marshall Pruitt was told and a couple other guys that I've talked to were told. But if you talk to 6 other different media guys, you're going to hear 6 different answers. And it is very confusing, and it's a little annoying. It's not annoying. It's frustrating because you could have 7 different opinions, and maybe part of all 7 of our opinions are right. So until I'm proven wrong, and if I am proven wrong, it's not going to be the first time, and definitely won't be the last time. It is what it is, and I'm sticking to what I was expressly told by multiple people. I think I was in Indy when I was told, or in Nashville. I don't remember. It was in August.
Yeah, I guess for me, I just don't understand why it's a big secret. Like, we could just have one statement,
right,
or one clarification, right, or whatever, to just end all discussion, and then we could just happily move on with our lives.
Like, they don't need to tell us what the exact prize, the, you know, prize money is or whatnot. That's totally fine, but just a little more definition would probably help us out a little bit.
Yeah, so that was something that came up. Grosjean to Andretti 2022 to replace Ryan Hunter-Reay has been all but confirmed by Marshall Pruitt of Racer.
Yes.
But Nathan Brown says it's not quite there yet, which, don't read too much into that. It's just Nathan reporting on what he has. It's not like he hates Marshall Pruitt or anything. I saw some takes on that Nathan Brown hates Marshall Pruitt. It's like, nope. He's just going with the info he's got.
Yeah.
Marshall may have different info.
So we're all doing here. And for what it's worth, I've been told definitively that not only will he be with Andretti next year, he already has tests planned for Sebring in October. So I'll throw my hat into this ring here with this.
Is this going to be one of the better off-season signings, or is this going to be something we look back on and say, wow, the warning signs were there with Andretti, maybe he shouldn't have done that?
You know, I would have said what you just said last week until you and Shannon convinced me otherwise, that Andretti is still big enough of an organization and still has enough engineering strength that it's something you have to go for. He'll have Colton Herta and Alex Rossi to lean on from a learning ovals perspective if he wants to keep doing ovals, which it sounds like he does, and his current engineer Olivier Boisson says he wants to do ovals, so I guess that's good, but I don't see how you would pass up an opportunity like this.
Yes, I remember that. I was ridiculed for my reference of comparing Dale Coyne to McDonald's, and
yeah, that was a terrible
Andretti
reference.
Autosport to Texas. How?
That was an awful reference.
How?
It's terrible. Shannon was right on that one.
I think you're just mean.
I mean,
I'm not calling Shannon wrong. I'm calling you wrong.
I've been told that a lot lately, so I think we're just rock and roll with that one.
I think it's a great opportunity, and I think, given how much he has outpaced his expectations at Coyne this year, it should only be a positive relationship.
I
wonder how long I wonder how long he's going to try to stick out this IndyCar thing. If he wants to do this for the rest of his career, if he's just doing it for a couple of years and then going to WEC, or I don't know what his intentions are, but we got to enjoy him while we got him for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what his intentions are, but the dude loves to work hard and you know, he gives it 100% whether it's a test or a race. So that's what you like to see, and that's what you want to see with guys moving forward. So I'm all for it, and I'm excited whether it's, you know, just a couple years or maybe he gets 6, 7, 8 years out of this, because I know he's older, but he's not. I don't think he's above 40. I'm gonna look that up while you while you bring up your next point if you have anything else.
Who's above 40?
Grosjean.
I think he's 38.
35.
Wow, he's got plenty of good years.
Yeah, left. Yeah. So I actually thought he was a little bit older than that. So I thought he was my age.
Not that old.
I'll make fun of myself once in a while.
I'm trying to look here, see if I missed anything. It's kind of a slow week. Definitely didn't want to have an episode though without saying hi to everybody at home. Thanks for listening. Yeah, it's been basically just kind of what's headlined the whole year, which is Jimmy and Roman. Oh, Miles Rowe won a race.
Yes, congrats.
For Force Indy in the F2000 series at New Jersey. So congrats to him. I saw the onboard video of his last lap pass, and that was pretty epic at a track where you can't really pass that well. So that's awesome. So congrats to him and the whole team over there. Honestly, I think that might be it.
That's it. Congrats to Miles. That track is really hard to pass on. I was going to go, but I, from being on the road for the last month, I was just a little burnt out, so I took a weekend off, and I'll be back in Portland and Laguna. So, yeah, I don't think we have too much else. Guys, there is an F1 race this weekend, so tune in. Be tweeting that as much as I can. And if you're in Indy, I'll be coming out this weekend to hang out and watch our Team Pit Lane member, Mr. Gruenholz, karting on Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. So I'll be out at Newcastle. And
Dashtig.
Yes, I'll be out and about doing some other things Saturday and Sunday and probably Monday morning before I fly back Monday evening. So, yeah, if you're out that way, shoot me a message and I'll try to say hello if I can. But F1 is this weekend at Zandvoort, so tune in. It's Sunday morning. And everybody, have a lovely weekend of racing.
Running should be simple. Just put on your shoes and go. And yet, when you try to learn about how to get better at it, especially as you age, you're confronted with conflicting advice, complicated workouts, and confusing nutrition trends that just won't work for you. On The Planted Runner, I'll share exactly how to run faster, longer, and feel great doing it at any age, because you don't have time to waste. I'm Coach Claire Bartholik, and I went from not running at all in my late 30s to finishing a marathon in 2:58 at age 42, all on a plant-based diet. I've helped hundreds of runners achieve new personal records well into their 60s and even 70s with science-backed training, plant-based nutrition, and proven mental strength techniques. Each episode of The Planted Runner is like a private coaching session on the run where you'll learn from me and the guests I interview. You'll get actionable lessons to help you become a better runner every week and reach goals you never thought possible. Whether you're training for your first 5K or your 50th marathon, take along The Planted Runner on your next run. Let me show you how your best running is still ahead of you.